Aloha. Welcome to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but nothing replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. Today we're going to be talking about Parkinson's disease, and we have a trio of guests. We have Terry Kennedy. She is a speech therapist and principal investigator on an upcoming trial on ways to improve speech and different ways you can use music to help people with their voice. We also have Glenn Higa. He is the president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association. And we have Kevin Lockett. He is a physical therapist and vice president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association. And we are going to be talking today about what is Parkinson's, what are some of the treatments, and some new trials that are happening right here in the islands. So thank you, everyone, for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Now, Glenn, you're the president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association. Are there a lot of people in the islands who have Parkinson's, and what does your association do?
Well, currently there are about 8,000 people in Hawaii that have been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. What we do is our mission is to support and positively affect the lives of people of those affected by Parkinson's, and we do that through education, support, and other programs and other services as well.
Now, for those people who may not be as familiar, what exactly is Parkinson's disease and how might someone get diagnosed?
Parkinson's is a neurodegenerative disease that affects the brain. And so basically what it is that there's a motor and non-motor symptoms. It's caused by a lack of dopamine in your body. And what happens is there, to get very scientific about it, there's neurons that typically speak to each other. That helps to create dopamine within everybody's brains. And when you have Parkinson's, that ability to create your own dopamine goes away. So, so that's the typical diagnosis. Typically, you're diagnosed through a clinical diagnosis. There is no laboratory test. There is no blood test that can determine if you have Parkinson's or not. So typically, most people will go and visit a neurologist or a specialized neurologist called a movement disorder specialist, and it's usually a motor symptom, and they look for different cues such as tremors, bradykinesia, which is slow movements, balance issues, or history of falling, and some will also ask cognitive questions as well, and from there they make a diagnosis of whether or not they think you have Parkinson's, and usually the final determination is they will give you medication for Parkinson's. If you feel better, then they determine that you probably have Parkinson's. If you don't respond well to the medication, then they look for alternative diagnoses.
So they give you the dopamine,
typically,
or some
yes.
version of dopamine that you might be missing, and if it seems to make things better, they go, you know, that's probably what that might be. And if it doesn't work, then they start looking at other alternative diagnoses.
Correct. So there's a subset group of Parkinson's diseases called Parkinsonisms, and those are conditions that are not treatable with levodopa treatments. So dopamine treatments. Multiple atrophy, Lewy body dementia, and parasupranuclear palsy. Those are three most common Parkinsonisms.
And that's a mouthful. I'm surprised that you remembered all those and said it so extremely well. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned motor symptoms. I'm curious, what sort of motor symptoms might someone experience that would make them seek out their doctor?
Okay, so good question. Typically, it's tremors in the hands or the feet, sometimes in the chin or the jaw. Bradykinesia, which is slower movements. A lot of times there's a shuffling of the gait. So when people walk with Parkinson's walk, they don't lift their feet up. They shuffle along, or they have heavy feet. Some don't swing their arms when they move and when they walk. Some have a masked face, so kind of like a lack of facial expressions, and so those are the most common motor symptoms. But there are also a whole host of non-motor symptoms as well that are associated with Parkinson's.
Like what?
Apathy, depression, anxiety, constipation, loss of smell, micrographia, which is small handwriting. There's about 40 different symptoms that are associated with, at least 40 different symptoms that are associated with Parkinson's, and then there's another bunch of other symptoms that are related related to the medication that people take for Parkinson's. So that number of potential symptoms can grow up to as much as 90 different symptoms. Fortunately, most of us don't have all 90. So
some symptoms might be from the actual disease process itself, and some symptoms might be from the treatment for it.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Kevin, you've got decades of experience in physical therapy. What sort of movement issues do you associate with Parkinson's? You've probably taken care of some patients and provided therapy to them. What are some of the classic findings that you notice as a therapist?
So, first thing to understand is most people have Parkinson's 5 to 7 years before they get diagnosed.
And that long? Wow.
And the reason is that initial symptoms of Parkinson's are the non-motor symptoms that Glenn mentioned of constipation, loss of taste and smell, sleep disturbances. And those are things that people don't typically go seek a neurologist for. A lot of people will just kind of blow it off. And what happens is that those things are happening because they're losing dopamine neurons. By the time they lose 80% of their dopamine neurons, that's when the motor symptoms emerge. And that is, the tremor. It's a resting tremor, so it's kind of unique to Parkinson's. Not to be confused, there's action tremors, essential tremors. But in Parkinson's, it's a resting tremor. And when you engage in a purposeful activity, actually the tremor gets less or dampened or better. Which is unlike other tremors. So that's one kind of indication you may have Parkinson's. The thing is that everybody who has Parkinson's doesn't have tremor, and everybody who has tremor doesn't have Parkinson's. So we have to look at other signs. Bradykinesia is moving slow, and that's probably one of the first things that people will start realizing, like, oh gosh, it used to take me 15, 20 minutes to get ready to go to work. Now it's taking me an hour, and those are the signs when they start seeking a medical treatment and eventually hopefully get referred to a neurologist at some point. And then there's the gait issues. Unfortunately, there are treatments to help with the symptoms of Parkinson's, but they don't help with balance and falls. And so usually it's physical therapy is a key to help kind of keep people out of trouble, as the Parkinson's emerges to gait issues. Yeah.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about what some of those therapy options are and how that might help somebody, particularly if they're trying to work on their balance and avoid falls. We'll be right back after this quick break. Stay with us.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk. Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. I'm here with Glenn Higa, the president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association, physical therapist and vice president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association, Kevin Lockette. And Terry Kennedy is on the line. She is a speech therapist. And we're going to talk some more about, right before the break, we were talking, Kevin, about physical therapy ways that you can help with some of the motor symptoms. And, one of those things that we always hear about, I remember from school, is kind of the concept of a shuffling gait. And if somebody's trying to turn direction, that it really exacerbates some of the balance issues. So with the gait and with the motor symptoms, what sort of therapy options are available? I sort of vaguely remember like boxing as being an activity to keep people quick on their feet that kind of helps them with just the speed of movement. But how can we help people if they have this to not fall down?
So boxing, I'm glad you said that because we're going to definitely talk about physical activity. But what happens with Parkinson's is that it robs your ability for automatic movement, everything automatic, eye blinking, swallowing, even automatic postures. So, for example, if I am standing on a hillside that's, you know, slanted, I don't think about it. Automatically, I'll shift my center of gravity so I don't fall down the hill. If you have progressed Parkinson's, that automatic pilot may not be working for you if you're not getting the dopamine, and then you would just fall down the hill. So one thing that we teach in rehab for Parkinson's is to compensate with purposeful movement. So purposeful movement is housed in a different area in your brain that Parkinson's is not affecting. And so we teach people to kind of manage their center of gravity, just like turning off the automatic pilot and just flying the plane. Then they can actually avoid a lot of falls through that strategy. As far as you mentioned boxing, I'm glad you did. There are medical treatments for Parkinson's. They're symptomatic, so they will help with the symptoms, but they don't slow down the disease. And that's the medications is the first line of defense. There is a surgery called deep brain stimulation, which is basically a pacemaker for the brain. And there's a focused ultrasound that is FDA approved for Parkinson's tremor. All those treatments will help with some or all of the motor symptoms, but they don't slow down the disease at all. What does slow down the disease is physical activity. So there is a large body of evidence now that basically physical activity like boxing will delay the disease and basically protect the neurons.
Wow. I thought it was just to help them with sort of quick step movements. I didn't realize it even helped to slow the progression of the disease process.
Yeah, so that's a big movement. And locally here, you know, Hawaii Parkinson's Association, we're promoting a lot of, try to increase access to fitness centers, YMCAs. We help sponsor and train the YMCAs to have Parkinson's classes twice a week. Actually, we have a training coming up in July. So it's such a big part of the treatment, and I think the kind of the catchphrase now is that exercise is medicine. If not, it's the best medicine, especially for people with Parkinson's.
Now, we talked a little bit about some of the effects of the tremor being something that you said intentional. When you do an intentional movement, the tremor reduces. Do you think that has something to do with how, like you described, standing on a hill, if you practice intentional movement, you use a different area of your brain, and that allows you to go ahead and do that function?
I think so, and not just in all aspects. So not just in moving physically, but also, as Terry will extrapolate on, in speech and swallowing to help you know, with those issues as well.
Well, Terry, let's talk with you a little bit about some of the speech issues, because certainly there have always been some thoughts that potentially listening to someone's voice and or their ability to swallow and maintain that process of even just eating has a lot to do with some earlier diagnosis of multiple conditions that you might be able to detect in someone's voice early on. What are some of the areas that speech therapists can help regarding improving people who have Parkinson's? What happens to their voice and how can it be fixed?
Yeah, so 90% of individuals with Parkinson's are likely to develop speech disorders. They're not always the first and foremost symptom that you recognize. Obviously, the bigger gross motor movements are the things that people usually recognize first and go to their doctors. But some signs and symptoms that we see a lot with Parkinson's is reduced volume. So the patient's talking a lot softer, imprecise articulation or slurred speech. They may talk really fast or really slow. Their vocal quality may be poor, meaning it's very breathy, hoarse sounding, or they may not even produce a good voice at all some parts of the day. Monotone voice, which is that we want that variation in our pitch. So, you know, our voice goes up when we're asking a question and we're excited. A lot of times with Parkinson's, there's just that flat voice, no matter what the emotion is. Reduced breath support, and then reduced facial expression, which is a huge part of communication. It's not just what we say, but it's how we say it. In addition to that, swallowing becomes an issue because our mouth and our throat, right, that's what we're using for speech, but those are the same muscles we're using for swallowing. And so that can become an issue. So drooling may be a symptom. Choking on your saliva or choking or coughing with foods and liquids. And in fact, aspiration pneumonia, which is just a fancy way of saying we choked on something and it got into the lungs and caused an infection, is reported as the most common cause of death in Parkinson's and is actually estimated to account for as much as 70% of the mortality rate. Both speech and swallowing are automatic. So again, like Kevin and Glenn spoke earlier, talking about that automatic part of the brain that's affected with Parkinson's, these are automatic acts that we start to do less and less. So like I said, speech and swallowing is highly automatic. We don't really concentrate or think too much about it. When we're talking or we're swallowing, it just happens. In fact, most people are surprised to know we swallow anywhere from 600 to 900 times a day. We're definitely not thinking about that when that happens. So when you have Parkinson's, that part of the brain that's dealing with those automatic behaviors is the part that's not working as it should. And for this reason, we have individuals with Parkinson's talking less, swallowing less, which in turn weakens that muscle or the muscles of the mouth and the throat due to disuse of them.
Well, and I think that also adds to what we talked about earlier. Glenn had mentioned the whole emotional aspect of it. I mean, if you're communicating less, if you're unable to engage with other people, your environment, it sort of starts a spiral that intervention is really important. So what are some of the things when we talk about swallowing, we talk about speech, you know, Kevin mentioned that exercise helps, boxing helps. Are there any particular aspects of speech that can help? Does somebody practice their swallowing, do that sort of intentional swallowing? What are some of the things that can help from a speech therapy perspective?
Yeah, so specialized speech therapy programs for those with Parkinson's, such as the Speak Out program, it was developed by the Parkinson Voice Project in Richardson, Texas, helps those with Parkinson's strengthen these muscles and then retrain the brain to bypass that automatic center and use an intentional center of the brain to not only regain but maintain their speech and swallow function. And this is actually a program offered here in Hawaii. My clinic, Speech, Swallowing, and Voice Specialists of Hawaii, uses this program solely, and it's been wildly successful, not only here in Hawaii, but across the world.
So Speak Out is one option that people have to work on intentional speech. Are there other activities that can help? Now, you and Kevin are involved in a clinical trial right now, and that's something novel that, you know, I wouldn't have thought would have been, other than traditional vocal therapy, I would not have thought about it, but tell me more about that.
Kevin, did you want to tell more about the study?
Sure, I'll jump in. So the things that, as Terry mentioned, that they work on in speech therapy or the difficulties is phonation or strength of voice, articulation, pitch, and saliva management. And so those are also things that you work on when you're learning to play the harmonica. So I happen to, I've been working with Parkinson's for 30 years, but also I've been playing harmonica for about 30 years. And I don't know why I didn't put the two together till recently. I thought, gosh, you know, maybe that could be helpful. And so we did a literature review, and there was no articles on harmonica and Parkinson's. There were some articles on harmonica to help COPD. So we thought, well, we wanted to do a program, but we wanted it to be evidence-based. So we partnered with some neurologists, and we wrote for a grant through the Parkinson's Foundation, and we received the grant to do a study of seeing the benefits of harmonica as an adjunct to speech therapy.
All right, I'm going to keep everyone in suspense. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. When we come back after this break, we are going to hear Kevin Lockett play his harmonica right here in the studio, and then describe for us how some of the same principles of playing a harmonica actually help to strengthen the voice. We'll be right back.
Support for HPR comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
Okay, I've kept them in suspense. Kevin, let's hear it. Now, while you're doing that, I'm watching you, and your cheeks are pushing out some air, and you're using your hands, and you're blowing out through the mouth, and these are all things that, you know, are part of playing the harmonica, but tell me how that is beneficial and what you're studying as part of this trial.
So we did a pilot class, actually, with my support group, so I made them all guinea pigs, and they were happy to do it, but When you teach harmonica, it's you have to talk about posture, and we talk about breathing and basically using your belly breathing versus your chest breathing for better control. So you can have better control to play the harmonica, which also, I believe, and Terry can jump in, transfers over to speech as well. The other things that what happens a lot with Parkinson's progresses with speech is that people have a kind of a monotone quality to their voice, and so they don't alter their pitch. And as Terry mentioned, may have some issues with articulation. And so when you're playing harmonica, music would be really boring if we played monotone, right? So by altering the pitch, you make interesting noises, and then and through articulation you can express yourself, so I think all that would carry over.
So you mentioned you have your group of guinea pigs, and did they all learn how to play the harmonica?
So we did at one class. We had 20 harmonicas donated, and there was no musical talent required or experience, and they crushed it. It was so much fun, and actually I was underprepared because I thought it would take longer to go over kind of the basics of how to play and all that, and they kept on, had to up my game and throw more things at them. So but it's a fun way to work on those skills and to do it in a group setting.
So Terry, if somebody wanted to consider being in a trial or being part of this, how would they do it, Terry or Kevin?
Terry, I'll go ahead.
Kevin, you can go ahead and answer that. Yeah.
So basically, we will be recruiting subjects to be part of the study. If you're interested, you can contact the Hawaii Parkinson's Association. Our email is our website's very simple. It's parkinsonshawaii.org. Or if you just Google Hawaii Parkinson's, you'll find us very easily. And just reach out to us, and we'll let you know as we get the study started. The commitment is 3 months, basically. You're going to get harmonica classes 2 times a week for 3 months, and there'll be some pre- and post-testing of your speech quality and a rating by a neurologist pre- and post, and so we can see the benefits of the program.
Any intentions to go longer than 3 months if people are loving it? I mean, I could picture concerts coming up.
Well, the whole end game is to show that there is evidence that that it is helpful, and then to basically develop a program, and the end game is to develop a program in the box that we can emulate, not just on Oahu, across all the islands, and hopefully nationally, because it hasn't been done before. So really, I think Hawaii Parkinson's Association is in a unique position to really contribute to programs that will help everyone.
Well, and the scientific knowledge in addition to the musical talent. Terry?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that one thing we find a lot of times with those with Parkinson's is with a lack of dopamine, there is a lack of or decrease in motivation, right? So it's one thing to get that therapy and get that voice better, because that is, of course, what the speech pathologist is trying to do. But this study is unique in that we're trying to add some supplemental exercise programs that will help them to maintain it after they have, quote, graduated from their speech therapy program. So I love that the question with this study is, once they complete their speech therapy with a speech pathologist, can this harmonica program be a successful exercise program to aid in maintaining that function gained through speech therapy? And can it help improve quality of life through not only socialization, but simply the joy of music?
Well, I would think yes to the joy, yes to the socialization, and hopefully it would help enhance people's abilities. I know that for vocalists, for singers, they tend to have better lung capacity because they're using it more. If they use their diaphragm to breathe, if they're doing things that are helping with that sort of additional projection of their voice, they often do have some other physical changes that help them as time goes on. Now, Glenn, I'm curious, because are you a harmonica player? Have you become one?
I am not a harmonica player, no.
Yet?
Not yet.
Yet?
Not yet, yeah. My family is very musically inclined, but that gene did not reach me.
Well, Kevin said it was easy to learn and get started, and you never know. So tell me about some of the ways in which the Hawaii Parkinson's Association, in addition to hearing about the trial that people can participate in, what other opportunities are there for people if they go to the website to hear more about some of the supportive things that your organization is providing?
Yeah, so one of our main goals is to ensure that no one with Parkinson's feels or is alone or isolated or in isolation or isolated. And it's really important for us because it can be a very socially isolating condition, as Kevin mentioned, and as Terry also mentioned, that with the decrease in speech quality and the conversationalist decreasing, people tend to shy away from other people with Parkinson's. So we need to be able to make sure that we are reaching as many people as possible. And the first line of defense for that is through our support groups. So one of our main goals this year and one of our main focus this year is to increase the number of support groups we have here, not only just on Oahu, but also statewide. And then also for various categories like young onset Parkinson's, like myself. I was diagnosed at 48 years old 6 years ago. And so we have a young onset support group that we started right before the pandemic took off, and then disappeared like a lot of groups did, during COVID and so forth. But we're also increasing the number of support groups on Oahu. We've launched 4 new support groups already this year, and we're looking to do more. And they're more strategically placed geographically because on Oahu, with the traffic and everything, people will just not probably drive 10 miles to go to a support group, but they will go to one in their neighborhood. So we're trying to cover as many neighborhoods as possible. And so that's one of the ways that we're helping people. We're also doing a lot more outreach, letting people know that we exist, who we are, what we do, and so forth. And then also education. We need to educate especially for the young onsets, that we need to educate the employers that people with Parkinson's, are abled and not disabled, even though it is considered a disability. But we can all still work. I work as a fitness trainer, and also the president of the Hawaii Parkinson Association. We need to educate just everybody, the general population, about what Parkinson's is. Most people think of it as Michael J. Fox having tremors and dyskinesia or the uncontrollable movements, but it's much more than that. As Kevin mentioned, the non-motor symptoms, which I believe are way more debilitating than tremors and slow movements and so forth.
And so you mentioned earlier the website. Can you tell us what that is again?
Sure, it's parkinsonshawaii.org, and you can find information on where our support groups are located. You can find information on exercise programs that are available. You can find information on clinical trials that are coming up, on doctors that are available here in Hawaii, and so forth.
Wonderful. Well, and I want to thank you. That was Glenn Higa, the president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association. Thanks to Kevin Lockett, vice president of the Hawaii Parkinson's Association and expert physical therapist. And thank you for Terry Kennedy on the line, speech therapist. If you want to learn more about this show, you can always go to hawaiipublicradio.org. Follow the links to The Body Show. You can also find us on the HPR app. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. And we are going to be in the countdown of the final shows of The Body Show for here on Mondays. But moving forward, you're going to hear The Daily. It's a program from the New York Times. And you'll be able to hear that at 6:30 on The Body Show, at the same time as The Body Show, starting in August. See you then.